For the next year, Iowa, Ohio, Wisconsin, Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, they're going to get a lot of attention. But what about little old Virginia, the Commonwealth, which once, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to start over.
Okay.
Over the next year, you're going to be hearing a lot about Iowa, Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida. What about little old Virginia, the state which was once stark red, now seems to be pretty bright blue. Is Virginia in play in 2020? I'm Rumsfeld W. Martinez, editor-in-chief of Ace Journal Today, and we're about to find out. Welcome to Fear Plus Loathing 2020. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode as we continue our regular series discussing a lot of the topics that the media tends to either ignore or not necessarily care about as we plunge into another presidential election cycle. Please do me a favor, follow me on Twitter at Remso4VA, that's R-E-M-S-O-F-O-R-V-A, and I'll follow you back indiscriminately. That way we can go ahead and keep this conversation going after the show. I've been living in Virginia since 2008, and quite strangely, I think I brought, some bad luck with me because the weather that year was just terrible. I remember that quite explicitly. But I also remember that was the year that Barack Obama won Virginia, and that was something that nobody really saw. And then what ends up happening, he wins it again in 2012, and then we're like, okay, Obama's gone. Everything's going to be fine. Next go around. Then Hillary won us. And it's quite strange because Virginia has always been a very traditionally conservative state, except whether you blame, people coming in and bringing some of their bad luck policies with them or different changes in how we view ourselves and our role within our state and government. Virginia is one of those strange places where people don't necessarily really pin down why we're going so blue. But on top of that, we also have a Republican-led state legislature. It's quite strange in that sense. Why is it we could be so red in some cases but so blue in other cases? Is it because people tend to care more about federal politics and not state-level stuff? Or is it something completely different? Today, talk to me about this is Heather Mitchell. She's the Republican nominee for the 2nd District. She's a mother, active-duty military spouse, and public servant. She's... I'm going to go ahead and admit this, folks. And I think this is incredibly important for conversations going over. As someone that tries to be objective in most situations, I'm also a person that has their own interests at heart. This past year, I've given plenty of money, small amounts here and there, to a lot of Republican candidates. And when it comes to this type of stuff, we need to admit that we all have our own interests in play. What I want is I want free markets, I want to protect my gun rights, I want school choice, I want to protect the sanctity of life. So therefore, I donated to Heather, I donated to plenty of people who carry those principles. And when it comes to those principles, I tend to think that Virginia is more conservative than people think. So we're going to go ahead and discuss this further. Heather, thank you so much for coming on the program today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
So just to kind of start things off, why is Virginia in such a weird position? Because, you know, when you look at local politics across the board, we're a pretty red state, but pundits across the board throughout the network media are saying that we're probably definitely going to vote Democrat in 2020. Are we just confused? Do we not care? What's going on with Virginia voters?
To be honest with you, it's very confusing to me, too, because if you look at any election map over, you know, the last 10 years, you will see that the majority of the Commonwealth votes red, very conservative. But you've got a few of those really dark blue areas that basically decide the fate of the entire state. And those are generally in the Northern Virginia region, around Richmond, you know, Hampton Roads area. And I think what happens is with the influx of all of the people moving into the Northern Virginia area, especially, it's like that trickle-down effect of swamp creatures invading the Commonwealth. Generally, all of them work up in D.C. and carry more far left opinions. And it seems that they come out when it affects the entire state. I've lived in Virginia for 5 years. We moved here from Okinawa. My husband's active duty Marine Corps. And we fell in love with Virginia, and we decided to make Virginia home. And I got involved, volunteering with a lot of the local committees and the grassroots. And what's interesting, when you go out and talk to just your average voter, the things that you hear shouted across the TV has really nothing to do with what the voters actually care about. Generally, you can see on off-year elections from the governor's race, like this year, the trend normally swings to the right, to the red, because the Republicans are talking about issues that actually matter to voters on a day-to-day basis. Generally, when you have the statewide elections, that's when you've got the interest from out of the state that invades our Commonwealth.
So one of the other things that we observe when we look at voting patterns within the state of Virginia is that traditionally women vote by pretty large margins for Democrats, even in off-year elections. Everything comes down to topics such as education, reproductive rights, which is a euphemism for abortion rights, and just this general concept of essentially – How do I put this without getting in too much trouble on Twitter? It seems like women in Virginia, primarily in Northern Virginia, they're less likely to have a family. They're more likely to vote Democrat. They're more likely to be against things such as gun ownership. I mean, we're even seeing some folks within the Fairfax Democrat Committee talking about abolishing private education in Virginia. I mean, I don't quite understand why it's traditionally women that do this, but you're one of the few female candidates running as a Republican this cycle. Do you feel that that's going to help you earn the vote from female voters, or do you think that's going to put you in a bit of an awkward position? Because whenever a woman runs as a Republican, like, you know, it's like the long knives are drawn from the media, from other women, whereas when a Democrat runs as a woman, it's some type of Rosie the Riveter stance. I just feel like, you know, Republican women are constantly at a disadvantage because that narrative is against them. What's been your experience thus far, and what do you expect?
No, I agree. If you're a conservative Republican woman, you are demonized that, you know, you're husband is doing your thinking for you, that you can't think for yourself. Well, I'm tired of the Democrats controlling the narrative. I and many conservative Republican women chose to run this year because we're tired of having our voices drowned out by the Democratic women. I don't know many women who support, you know, abortion on demand or infanticide. I have not met one, I can honestly say. And to think that, you know, that is the narrative, that they speak for all women, well, they don't. They don't speak for me. They don't speak to a lot of, you know, women in Virginia. And that was one of the big reasons that I decided to run, was because my opponent was one of the sponsors on the Kathy Tran infanticide bill. And I could not sit back and do that. I think a lot of it is the messaging that we need to get out. The GOP is, I mean, phenomenal on economic, you know, legislation and endeavors. And we don't promote that as much because that's an issue that affects every person, regardless of your gender. And to look at these, the legislation that comes out from the GOP, you realize that they actually care about their constituents. Most of the legislation that I saw come out that was actually killed, I should say, in committee, if the Democrats had their way, that was billions of dollars lost. And I I guess basically what I'm saying is I'm here to be heard, and I am here to stand up for my constituents.
So when you go out and you knock on doors and you talk to voters within your district, what are some of the primary concerns and, you know, topics that tend to be something that, you know, they care more about than, let's say, something in Fairfax or what have you? Because it seems to be that a lot of Northern Virginia, as we've spoken of thus far, seems to drive a lot of the conversation, but no one ever really cares about the economic situation out in Danville. No one tends to talk about economic growth in Charlottesville. It seems that if you're not in Fairfax County or you're not in Arlington, Reston, or Alexandria, no one seems to care about what you're talking about.
And it's true. It really is. The district that I'm running for, it's really actually a very unique district because it encompasses part of Prince William County and part of Stafford County. And the one thing that I plan to do, one of my primary goals, is to represent the entire district. Because what makes it unique is the number one issue of constituents that I talk to is infrastructure, traffic. If you know anything about my district, you realize that
your toll roads are killing me.
Tell me about it. The district is actually cut in half in regards to transportation regions. So Prince William belongs to the Northern Virginia region, which has Loudoun, Fairfax, Arlington, Alexandria. Whereas Stafford belongs to the Fredericksburg region, which is basically all of the Northern Neck, Caroline County, Spotsylvania County, and so forth. So they're two very unique areas. And if you are honored enough to be elected and to represent a district, you've got to represent the entire district, not just the area that gave you the most votes. And that seems to be what's happening. A lot of the talk that you hear, it all centers around what happens in Northern Virginia. And like you said, it doesn't reflect what is going on down in Roanoke or Lynchburg or Danville or, you know, Lancaster County. When you look at Virginia, it's basically four different states almost put into one because each area is so unique and has its own unique resources and goals. And you have to understand what is great for somebody in Northern Virginia may not be so great for somebody in Southwest. And it's all about listening. I think the art of listening has gone by the wayside, listening and compromise. And those are two of the things that I'd really like to bring back if I'm elected.
So, you know, you're entering your race in a really interesting time. You'll be competing in a presidential year, but just in terms of, you know, Virginia specific, let's call them controversies. I mean, America was horrified when Governor Northam went on the radio and talked about killing children after they were born. Mm-hmm. And then there was the whole blackface. Is he the guy who's pretending to be a black dude, or is he the Klansman in his college yearbook? And a lot of Democrats were calling on him to resign, not because he advocated for the murder of children, but because he did something which went against their politically correct gospel. And the one big error that it's a big problem in my opinion, is that you had a lot of Republicans, some candidates, some activists, some local leaders that were in a way kind of echoing these Democrat sentiments to get rid of Northam, despite the fact not understanding that just because they don't like Ralph doesn't mean they're suddenly going to vote Republican. Do you think the whole issue surrounding the governor on both counts is going to help you and other Republicans in this upcoming cycle? Or do you think it's something that, for the most part, seems to be something that no one really talks about anymore? It's almost like a dead issue at this point.
No, actually, I think it will help us because it shows how hypocritical the Democratic Party is. If that was a Republican governor,
they'd be out the next day.
Oh, he would have been out within minutes of the news story breaking. It shows how hypocritical they are. Not only what's going on with the governor, but look what's going on with the lieutenant governor.
No, I completely forgot about that. No one's talking about that rape accusation. No one.
Yes. And you know, the House caucus has repeatedly asked to allow these women to testify. They asked for a bipartisan hearing so that their story could be heard. And you've got a lieutenant governor who's basically calling them liars because they did not file charges. A majority of victims do not file charges because they have gone through a traumatic experience. And for them to even come forth is beyond brave. And to diminish what they went through is just utterly appalling and hypocritical. The, you know, the Democrats are in charge, you know, took control of the Me Too movement. But when it involves one of their own, they turned a blind eye.
Yeah, I mean, we could just look at what happened with Justice Kavanaugh. I know for a lot of people that feels like it was years ago. But between his hearings of Christine Blasey Ford, who had no evidence, who had no one to back her up for her claims, they were just words. You know, I'm not taking a stance on that, but you know, you have that situation and people were are still trying to ruin Brett Kavanaugh's life, whereas you actually have evidence and witnesses that are going up against Justin Fairfax, and those women are essentially trying to be blacklisted.
Yes, the hypocrisy is amazing. It really, really is. And I think a lot of Virginians are utterly disgusted by that hypocrisy, and I believe that it will show in November at the ballot box. Part. Yes.
I hope so, but I tend to ask myself this question, especially as I converse with some of my more liberal friends. You know, I ask them. I asked one of them. I had lunch with a friend of mine last week, and I asked her, you know, would you, you know, how do you feel about Ralph Northam? Like, do you feel like you want him to step down or what have you? And she looked at me. She said, absolutely not. And I was a bit surprised because a few months prior, she was like, you know, let's kick this guy out. But ultimately, she said, I distrust Republicans more than I dislike Ralph Northam. And to a large degree, that really did shock me. And frankly, I think we're in a political environment, both statewide and nationally, where politics, partisan politics specifically, which party you side with, tends to have become the prominent religion for most people, which is why I'm kind of afraid for Republicans, you know, as they're entering a presidential election cycle, because you're going to have 30% of Virginians that never vote except when they're voting for president, which I think is funny because the president has the least impact on your life, period. And they'll go out and they'll go ahead and they'll vote straight Republican or straight Democrat, despite not knowing who's running, despite not knowing what the issues are, and essentially just playing like American Idol. Do you think running your campaign in a presidential year is going to help you, or do you think it's going to harm you based off the historical trends in Virginia, where Republicans do well in non-presidential years now, and they typically don't fare as well during presidential years?
Well, I think it's a matter of getting out and talking to the voters. I go out every single day knocking on doors personally. I'm not going to send a huge, you know, group of 20-something-year-olds, you know, passing out literature. I think the impact of actually having the candidate stand on somebody's front door and speak with them. I speak to, regardless of party, I would love to have a conversation. I've spoken with many Democrats. The first question out of their mouth, you know, when I knocked on the door was, are you Republican or a Democrat? And I will reply, I'm a Republican. And they go to hand me my literature back. And I was like, well, I would still like to have a conversation if you have the time, because I'd like to know what's important to you.
And right, conversation isn't a cosign. I think most people try and ignore that.
And that's the thing. And I have, you know, spoken with Democrats who initially did not want to talk to me, but once they realized I was actually interested in hearing what they had to say, what is important to them, we ended up having fabulous conversations. I've sat there for, you know, a half an hour, 45 minutes talking with somebody because I am generally interested in what, you know, what can be done to improve their lives on a daily basis, you know, with, you know, education, taxes, you know, transportation. These are the kitchen table issues that people actually care about. And regardless if you have an R or a D or an I or whatever next to your name, we all basically care about the same thing. And it's getting past all of that identity politics and all of that nonsense and having the conversation and listening to each other instead of talking at each other, because nothing gets resolved that way. And I feel by having these conversations and getting out there and being involved in the community, that I can get people to vote for me.
Definitely. And we have so much time between now and Election Day to see how things go. Heather, best of luck. We've run out of time. We'll have to definitely get you on the program again soon. If folks at home want to go ahead and learn more about you, check out your website, volunteer, donate, all that jazz, how could they do so?
Go to Mitchell for Delegate. It's MitchellForDelegate.com. I'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. Heather, thank you so much, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks. Well, all politics is local, but sometimes the local seems to get drowned out by the national. Having these conversations with local candidates across the board is incredibly important. And if you're listening at home and now you know my bias, if you have a topic you want to discuss, if there's someone you think I should reach out to and have a conversation with, I'm more than happy to do so. This is a free and open platform for everybody, discussing the topics that the mainstream media won't. As always, you can find all episodes of the show, Fear Plus Loathing 2020, as long as all the awesome articles and op-eds by our amazing columnist, Dan Wass, author of Good Gun, Bad Guy, Brian Nichols from The Brian Nichols Show, Dominic Pierce, Eli Bowman, everyone and more at acejournaltoday.com. As always, I'm Remso W. Martinez. Good night.